On the phone with us now, we have Michael Anderson from... I'm going to get in trouble by mispronouncing this, Michael, but how do you pronounce the nation in which you represent?
Gumaroi.
Now, you guys have recently had a meeting, 91 elders representing seven nations, Aboriginal nations. How was that? That was last week. How was that?
Mate, it was fine. It was, you know, what we did was talk about future directions and past wrongdoings by government.
Yeah, and there's a hell of a lot of those, isn't there?
Well, there's a lot of those, but the thing is that the people didn't want to dwell on them. The people just wanted to look at, okay, a wrong was done. Mm. We now have to get admittance and rather than denial, and so we can all go forward.
Yeah, I'm just reading from some of your writing, especially your press release over the last few days. You're no longer seeking charity, nor will be accepting feel-good programs for the sake of political convenience of the government and their bureaucrats.
That's about it, mate. We're you know, we're sick and tired of you know, government coming up with strategies from, you know, from desk jockeys.
Mm. So I mean, we're talking over 200 years well, may as well put it bluntly, genocide.
Well, that's about it. And you know, of course, the a lot of people think that genocide only incorporates you know, killing, the physical killing of people, but it's also about a way of life and a quality of life. And of course, if a government sort of sets out on a pathway that creates a situation where it creates difficulty for a quality of life for a people, then of course that's part and parcel of the Genocide Convention itself.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I'm going to be talking about that a little bit later in the show, and it's something we're going to follow over the next few weeks. I've been talking with other elders who put that action into the Melbourne High Court for a writ of mandamus.
Mandamus, yeah, writ of mandamus.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Against the government for crimes of genocide, and that should be interesting to talk to those guys as well. But specifically, and there's another quote of yours, which I find is quite interesting, where you say, "We will not be entering into any form of paternalistic and or condescending arrangements, such as having to wash our children's faces before we can gain a benefit."
Well, that's about right, mate. Can I just say this to you, that, you know, like, back in the early 1960s, I remember, you know, when, late 50s, early 60s, in primary school, when we got up into the more senior years in primary school in New South Wales, you know, there was this clean-clad and courteous child policy that they had in place for Aboriginal children before they can go to school, because, you know, you had to be clean-clad and courteous before you could attend a white school. Mm. Otherwise, if a white family could complain, then you're out of school. Now, mate, I remember them, you know, in Walgett, where I went to school, in northwest New South Wales, they used to put us through a program of washing our bodies and then parting our hair before we went into classroom after the bell. If you were found to have nits, well, then off you went. If you went in there with dirty knees and dirty elbows, well, you weren't allowed to go into the classroom. You were sent home. So, you know, some of the things that I see the government sort of asking people to do these days in terms of doing things for themselves, and then we'll give you a benefit. Now, you know, if we were one Australia and we were all part of Australia, well, then why are they setting special laws for Aboriginal people aside so that they can gain those benefits? Are we not entitled to those benefits, as they always say we are?
If you look at all the history of government intervention into Aboriginal nation, basically over the last couple hundred years, and specifically, I suppose, in the last 40 years, it neglects. It hasn't done it. It hasn't fixed it. It hasn't done any good. There's no real outcome that's been positive.
Yeah, but mate, what you got to understand is that when governments design programs, they're designing it for a different race of people, a different type of people, with a different set of customs, laws, traditions, different set of norms, and a different, totally different lifestyle and the way we see the rest of the world. And so basically what they've been doing all these years is trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, and it just don't work, mate. The system that we have under our custom and traditional law, even today, after 200 and whatever it is, 20 years or 15 years of white occupation, we still have a law, we still have a way of life, and a lot of us stick to that.
Yeah, well, I noticed you used the term occupation there, and one other thing that you said is the land of the Gomorrah people was not peacefully settled.
No way in the world, mate. We have all the documented history on the battles that went on. Our people killed white farmers when they killed, you know, these white people who were taking up runs in the area. They sent in a military force. There was a place called Burke on the Darling River, which is a pretty famous place. That was originally a fort. And then there was another place called Warri Elder over near the New England, just off New England Ranges, and Rauma in North Queensland. In this area, if you look on the map, within that sort of triangular area, there was a 14-year war went on here, and we fought these people and we kept them out, and they sent in military troops to put it down.
So there's a proud history.
Oh, of course there is. And, you know, you look at Walgett, starting from Wellington, which sits on the border of the Gumeroi-Yualiyo Nation, Gumeroi and Wiradjuri Nation, in the southern parts of central New South Wales. And then you look at Walgett, and Moree. Well, these three towns are in the centre of the Gumeroi Nation, and that's where the Freedom Ride started, and when Charles Perkins came into the area.
Okay, so I suppose getting together is, bringing together the seven nations of that area is a step towards some kind of self-determination, away from government, paternalism?
Well, that's exactly true. One thing that I, want your listeners to understand quite clearly, the greatest fear that the government have in this country is Aboriginal people coming together as a united nation across the nation. Because I have a letter, because I used to be the director of the research for the development treaty from 81 to 85, before Hawke and Clyde Alding destroyed the movement and the program under the old NAC days. We got a copy of a letter at that time from the Crown Solicitor's Office to the Department of Aboriginal Affairs and to the Prime Minister, which said that there was a great problem for the Crown Solicitor's Office allowing Aboriginal people to be seen as a United Nations group through the election process within the NAC, because they said that if this model were to be modelled on the United States model of American Indian states, well then we could assert a right of self-determination because we elected a body of people representing different Aboriginal nation states. And so this correspondence is to the Prime Minister Malcolm Fraser at that time. So they're desperately worried about Aboriginal people uniting and arguing for self-determination.
Yeah, well, I suppose I've been looking at a map over the last week or so. There's a great map. I'm not sure where the source is. It's off our Indie Media website anyway. But there's a beautiful map of Australia, of the nation, of the country, the island itself, and across it there's a blobs of all different colours representing the different Aboriginal nations across Australia, and it's the best division of states that I've ever seen.
Well, it will, mate. You know, we're like the boundaries between Western Australia, Northern Territory, South Australia, and etc., and Northern Territory, and same with Queensland and New South Wales. If you were to look at the old colonised countries in Africa, when I went to a meeting in Zimbabwe, for example, at the meeting they were saying that South Africa and Namibia were separated by an agreement with Germans, because and they said, well, the German people love rulers and pencils, and they just drew a straight line straight up the centre of Africa, and said, well, okay, on one side is South Africa, on the other side is Namibia or Cameroon and so on, and they're just with straight line. Now, what they didn't realise at that time was that one family on one side of the river or one side of a mountain, then all of a sudden they were the same family, but they belonged to different countries. And that's exactly what they did here in Australia as well. They had no regard whatsoever for Aboriginal boundaries.
And in fact, I suppose that sort of relates all back to the Terra Nullius idea of, there's no people here when white man got here.
Well, no civilised ones, they say, anyway.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things that we're looking at. We're working at two levels. We're also looking at what some of the instructions were to the original settlers, and especially the governors. And one of the most interesting things that we've found so far in England, and they're also now available in Australia, is there's this great myth that they came out here believing that this country was terra nullius. Mm. Quite the contrary. The orders that were issued to Governor Phillip was that he come out here and apply the rules and disciplines of war. So they expected a confrontation.
So that's pretty much deliberate.
Oh, of course. Mm. And, you know, it's very convenient because they'd already learnt their lessons, you know, with the American Indians sort of developing allegiances with France, for example, during the Wars of Independence in the United States. So they couldn't really understand where Aboriginal people stood and what we were doing.
Yeah, so I suppose with the union of the Seven Nations there, is this open to other Aboriginal groups around the country?
We will be encouraging people to come together or send delegates to Canberra on the 20th of July. We're going to identify that as a date. It was a date when they passed the law to remove the Aboriginal Embassy in 1972. Mm. There was no law in the nation at that time that prevented Aboriginal people camping on public grounds. And, of course, those front lawns in front of Parliament House were public grounds. That's why they couldn't move the Aboriginal Embassy at the beginning when myself and two other fellows set it up in 72. So we laid the groundwork then for confrontation and protest, and it was peaceful, and we intend to carry on our whole confrontation from here on in through dialogue, and we hope the government will be gutsy enough to talk to Aboriginal people about us designing our own pathway for the future.
Yeah, I suppose also that... I'm thinking that this is a rejection of John Howard's hand-picked Indigenous Council.
Well, mate, no, we John Howard can do whatever he wants. you know, we're just coming back to ourselves and coming back to our own people. We, quite honestly, what went on in the past has gone on in the past. This is a new direction. If John Howard wants to persist with hand-picking people and selecting people, well, then they don't speak for the Gomeroi. They speak for whoever they speak for, but not for the Gomeroi. And we will be putting up a package. We're developing over the next 3 months a package that we'll be putting to state and federal governments in relation to how we want to be dealt with as a nation of people.
Mm. Excellent. So it seems like a very positive move towards some kind of self-control.
Well, that's what it is. It's self-control, self-management.
Yeah.
We're a proud people. We want to restore that dignity and pride back into our children. And, you know, this is also about setting a future for our future generations. And we understand what... We have a dream in our head, and we've had that since the 1950s. And before that, people who influenced me had a dream. And I guess we need to pursue that. And it's up to us now who've gone through the 60s, 70s and watched all the developments come up and crash down before our feet. And unfortunately, you know, one of the elders at the Moree meeting said the other day, you know, Aboriginal affairs are really like that proper drunken man, you know. He gets himself balanced and then all of a sudden he leans forward and he takes 5 real quick steps. But then he takes 6 backwards.
Mm.
And that's about where we are. You know, we're so in terms of our socioeconomic position, we're back in the 50s and 60s. Mm. That's where we are.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Michael. And I reckon we'll keep in touch with you over the coming months and see how it's all going.
Yeah. And I hope some of your listeners will will understand exactly where we're coming from and what we're trying to do and what we will do, not try to do, but what we will do. And if anybody wants to know, they can contact me and I'd be prepared to talk with them and even invite them. And if their people are organised, well, then we'd like to develop a treaty between them in terms of supporting each other and giving directions for each other.
Mm. All right, well, thank you very much, Michael, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.